Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
So it's warm in London. Why is it so warm in London, Professor Tim?
Because it is. Well, it's because of Westminster, the warmth of flatulence, all that hot air. No, I think most of it is actually provided by Liz Liz Truss thinking. I don't think it's flatulence in her case. I just think it's the sort of the huff of resentment and frustration
for being thrown out.
I think she throws herself out. I mean, you know, I'm throwing myself out there. I'm throwing myself out there. Take me. I shouldn't say that, should I? Probably many.
Oh, you should.
Have.
It needs to be said. It really does.
Well, I think I wouldn't be the first.
Nor last.
It's sad when I go into London, how cold it is at the moment, that I actually quite happily stand by buses because I know the pollution is going to provide warm.
But you get that warm updraft, don't you? It's so satisfying. And also when you go over those gratings and things, and it's a very user friendly city. I every time I go there, I think warmth.
But in summer, it's a bit of a problem.
Oh yes, well that's tourists, you see. Not Nadine Dorries. Suella Braverman has a solution for that. It's called Rwanda. Don't get me started, because we've got to deal with Lee, I think, at some point today, haven't we,
Mr. Anderson?
Lee, am I right? He used to be called 30p Lee.
He's still called 30p Lee.
Called 30p Lee. I'm only just discovering about him, and it's not a pleasant discovery. And I don't understand how somebody who can be so vile could be in charge of electioneering. But then, of course, he has form because of his doorstep ruse. But
we'd managed to record him setting up the apparently spontaneous doorstep encounter beforehand. Watch and listen. You can just see Anderson on the phone behind me.
Don't just make out you don't make out you know who I am. You know I'm the candidate, but not a friend. All right. I'm at staff car park. Have a quick look. Yeah. All right, my daughter. I'll see you in a minute. See you.
At the time, Anderson said the call was merely about campaign material.
Right, I better turn this off. Some leaflets have just come for me, so.
In all my years filming elections, I've long suspected that certain candidates have set up friendly voters to make them look that much more popular. But this is the first time we've caught some candidates.
But I mean, how many friends does he have? I don't think he has enough friends to.
We've seen them. He took them to 10 Downing Street. He took four of them down there and showed them off. Four of his friends, yeah. It's like, these are my friends from childhood.
Oh, right. So he could say, these are my friends. This is 10 Downing Street. Will you vote for us? because you know, that is now his job, isn't it? He's got a particular method with the voters. Did you hear the radio interview this morning?
No.
With a lady called Verity Cowley.
Mm-hmm.
Verity Cowley, I think. And she I'm trying to remember, because I used to teach philosophy. You teach Alex, you can help me here right now. I think there's a fallacy. And I was trying to think, it's not.
I'll tell you what I'm talking about when I'm talking about dishonesty. I'm talking about that video that you did, where you asked a friend to pose as an anti-Labour swing voter.
Have you ever told a lie?
But we're not talking about me. But this isn't. You know, I'm not.
Let's have a balanced conversation. Have you ever told a lie?
Well, I've not asked somebody to pretend to be somebody that they're not.
Have you ever told a lie? No,
I've not asked somebody to pretend.
Have you? So Verity, have you ever told a lie? Is it yes or no answer?
What I'm saying is, I've never asked somebody to pretend to be something that they're not, just to further my campaign. I've not asked somebody.
Have you ever told a lie?
And I am asking you whether that is dishonest.
Well, just answer the question, please. Have you ever told a lie?
I mean, what do you mean? We, as humans, you tell false truths to protect people.
So you're a liar.
You tell false truths.
So you're dishonest.
What I'm saying is there is a concern that based on what happened when you asked a friend to pretend to be an anti-Labour swing voter and you were caught doing it on camera, there is a concern
about honesty when it comes to you.
And yeah, I suppose I'm no just... concern. But, and let's talk about that then, because I think that's really important.
So we've established that you are dishonest in the course of conversation because you've admitted you tell lies. Let's talk about that video though, Verity. 3 weeks after that video surfaced, I was voted in as the first ever Conservative MP to be elected at a general election and beat Labour by 8,000 votes. So that's what the people of Ashfield think, and that's all that matters to me.
Okay, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, well, make sure you play all that. Make sure you play all that clip, Verity, because, you know, if you chop it...
I'm going to struggle to play... I am going to struggle to play it all because it is 10 minutes and we don't have 10 minutes of time, but...
If you chop it like I did last time, that's the last clip I give to Radio Nottingham. I want it all on, please.
I'm not going to be able to play it all because it's 10 minutes long. But this is also the...
Put any on.
Pardon?
Then don't put any on. You should put it all on, so people get the clear message of what exactly has been said. So
it's ten minutes long. I won't be able to play it all, but I will. You know,
you can play it in sections.
I can't. I mean, I've got to refer it to a producer. That's how we work We work as a team. But let me just listen to it.
Yeah,
and I'm just saying to
you not to put it on then.
I'm saying to you, let me just listen to it. There is a way of playing it where we're not playing 10 minutes out, but we're getting a flavour of what is being said. So let me just go back and listen to it. Let me refer it to my producer
No, you're not listening to me. I'm asking you now not to play it.
Why are you asking me that?
Because I can't trust you to play the whole lot and be fair to me. We're supposed to be talking about my role as a chair. Listen, please listen. We're supposed to be talking about my role as deputy chairman, not the other stuff.
But it all kind of
falls... So you went off on a tangent. If they'd known that... No, it doesn't. It might do to you, but to me it doesn't. I came on to talk about, as a favour to Hugh, to talk about my role as the deputy chair. So don't play it, please. If you do... I will never give you anything again.
I'm talking about you, and he kept on at this. Have you ever told a lie? I think he asked her 10 times. Wouldn't it be fun to go through modern conservative, particularly PMQs, and look at what sort of, technically, what sort of fallacies are being used, like the ignoratio elenchi is the big one, which is where you basically ignore the question and answer another one, which is Boris Johnson's, which is Boris Johnson's thing. That's what he does. We're going to deliver Brexit. Sorry, I knew him in the past. obviously not like Nadine Dorries. It's not hug a Boris moment. It's sort of anyway.
All hail the lava lamp.
Noreen, who is more disturbing, Liz Truss or Nadine Dorries?
Cool. That's a big question. That is a big question.
Or are they interchangeable?
I think they are interchangeable. I think they are.
What would happen if you fused the two?
Well, I'm worried that I did in my parody, to be honest. I saw the face of Liz, the anger of Boris not like reciprocating the flirting at one point. And yes, I thought, they are the same.
Did you not find it extraordinary, looking at Liz the other day, that she's almost... She's now doing a sort of toothless smile.
Mm. What, she holding her gums down?
She's holding her gums down. What? Yes.
So, if there's a choice between the three of who you would hug, I'm going to give you each different option. So, Max, you've got Mog, Truss, Sunak. Who would you hug?
Sunak, and then I'd reach down and grab his wallet. I know, that's really mean.
There might not be anything in it. Who am I?
He doesn't know how to use money.
No, he's terrible at it. Tim,
yes.
You've got Boris, Anderson, Keir Starmer.
Oh, well, Keir Starmer would be a non-starter because I know his friends from school. They're huggable. I think he is not. He's not a hugger. So that's that would be like hugging a goalpost. That's not something I'm going to go into. So it's Lee Anderson and Boris. Well, it has to be Boris. I mean, Lee Anderson, I would want to run away from Lee Anderson. I mean, I want to get as far away from Lee Anderson as I possibly can. He oozes that sort of Terminator look. Don't you think?
I don't know if I'd give him that rugged, muscular build of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, you can imagine him on the doorbell. At least somebody he knows. I'll be back with the cameras tomorrow. You're my only friend.
Noreen, you've got...
If you don't talk,
Liz Truss,
I'll go
Noreen
to
Torres,
sorry.
And Theresa May.
Oh.
Oh, difficult. I think before I answer this, it's making me laugh because it reminds me of that game that you play at school. Is it like sex, marry, and avoid? You've got three. I won't answer that one. I'd have to say I'd have to hug Liz Truss only because I feel like I have been part of the trauma that she's felt. So I just have to say I am sorry for my part in that.
An empathy hug.
Yeah, just, and but as long as she gave me the smile at the end, just.
Oh, have you ever tried doing Mrs. May?
No, I'll give anyone a go though. Do you know what I mean? No one's.
I mean, I don't want my question to be misinterpreted there, of course.
or the answer.
But I think when it comes to Liz Truss, I mean, it is that smile, isn't it? But when it comes to Mrs. May, she has the most extraordinary wobbly mouth. It's like looking at a cabbage on a bad day. A sort of vocal. If you could imagine a cabbage speaking, that would be Mrs. It's not running through fields of corn. It's running through a vegetable patch, and there is Mrs. May giving advice. don't you feel?
Yeah. And now I've got images of that while she's dancing, which is a strange.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
With the sound of music in the background, but instead of hills, it's corn. The corn is alive. Well, that also brings up ideas of Children of the Corn, which is a horror movie, which is pretty much what we're getting with this government.
It is what we're getting. Noreen, on the subject of Liz Truss, do you think she's improved her hand work? I mean, because... her hand jobs are terribly...
No. You might want to rephrase that.
Her hand movements are terribly lifeless, aren't they? It is like looking at a puppet on a bad day.
Yeah.
What do you think? Because you have channeled Liz Truss. So your hands are very expressive. Do you feel constrained?
no, for quite free, actually.
This is a political programme.
This has all got a bit Nadine and Boris, isn't it?
It has. But I mean, you know, we're just going back to Talk TV. We'll be on Talk TV any moment.
To answer your question, yeah, I think they've changed because they were already quite just like this and a claw now and then.
Yes.
There's a finger, but the last the interview she just did, she did like sort of.
Oh, she did. She did the porridge, the porridge stirring,
and like lots of like slicing salami.
And she seems to have lost the Let Me Be Clear.
Yeah, Let Me Be Clear. There's a few. She's added in some new ones. What's she say about fattening the pig on market day? Really made me.
Oh,
laugh.
That was superb. In fact, I had to write that down, and I was going to use that, and then I didn't use it. You're fattening the pig on market day.
But the hand things. When I watched it, it looked like she was trying to tell the interviewers that I'm going to pay you some more money if you be kind.
She's still in her article. Let's call it her article.
Hi, my name is Mira Patasan. I'm an author and I'm an activist. And GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Rather than when she was live, she still referred to Kwasi Kwarteng's package as his prodigious package, which I suppose goes with the hand movements. But she in the live interview, Kwasi didn't really get a mention.
No. Anything that, basically, if in doubt, just get energy out. The energy just came up, like.
The energy comes with the hands, doesn't it?
Energy comes with the hands. They're getting bigger as the energy rises.
How long did it take you to carve that script between Dorries and Borries? And do you actually think, or have you seen from what you've watched where they interact together, that there is flirting going on?
Good questions. Firstly, it took me about an hour to cut. It's probably the quickest I've written a script, actually, which is worrying on one hand, because when I first watched it, the interview, I thought, I can't parody this. I think we spoke about this the last time I came on. I was like, this is beyond parody. Like when he started talking about the cow and the anatomy of a cow, I didn't know what I was watching.
I've got a project, which is to master the form of the cow. So the cow.
But then weirdly I started writing it and I was like, this is all just them on a date. Like that this is just getting on the cameras, having a date. And to be honest with you, I didn't know much about Nadine Dorries, but like in the run up really. I've only in the last maybe year or so kind of come into it more. And every time I've watched her and every time she speaks about him, it is literally just like there's so much love there that it's kind of to me quite obvious, but I'm not sure if it is to everyone else.
No, it is.
Don't you love that on camera? She doesn't fancy him. Like she said it repeatedly. Like, and you can see there's like this element of grimace in her face when she's saying it. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate here. But there's also these memes. I mean, Max, have you seen these memes, Max?
Yeah, the one where she's in Parliament and she's looking at Boris, while he's speaking. Yeah, but also the thing, like when she hugged him, was it when she hugged him? She said, "I almost wet myself."
Yeah. Oh my God!
So did I. I have to see that.
That's why I thought I was watched. It was just like a different. I was in a different reality for a moment. How do you parody it? So that's why I thought I'll just take it to the next level. It's just sex.
But paint me like one of your French girls, wearing this, wearing only this. That's the end. Oh, I nearly wet myself with all the excitement.
But there's also another problem. Is you have a Tory MP interviewing another Tory MP About what? What was the interview about?
I think you're giving Nadine a lot of credit there. Nadine, you know, I think we should simply be grateful that during that interview she was reasonably coherent. Maybe she got everything written down somewhere. She can't read an auto cue, so I don't know where she wrote it.
Well, the interesting thing you did say, Tim, was you didn't understand why she was being plugged as a presenter, because she seems useless at it at present.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the clips that she did, considering she was essentially either in the cabinet or a backbencher, did they go viral? Would that be a right term, or would
But they went viral because she was incoherent.
Or extremely angry, yeah. Like,
incoherent.
And like the teeth coming out and something out of Alien.
Well, I could just say I don't understand. And I don't understand, but then nor does she, so that puts us in the same bracket. As I said, I would love to be interviewed by her. Oh, I'd love to interview her. I would love to find out if she actually has anything to say.
You never know, Tim.
Maybe she could give me the entire plot of her next novel in sort of a five minute chunk.
I'm a little down because all the Tories seem to be quite corruptible and bribeable. But then that segues us quite nicely into ECHR and what's happening.
Well,
I've got
£20 on my desk.
That'll probably do.
It would probably do.
Probably all you need in this day and age. We are cheap. We could talk about how they're all backstabbing Rishi right now. Nadine and Boris going on and interviewing, and Boris has clearly been going around making himself look presidential and touring all over the world. And then you've also got Liz Truss coming out and going, I didn't do anything wrong, it was great. It was you idiots that brought me down. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Max?
Like, for Boris, it's either he wants to come back and be prime minister once again, or it's just a way of promoting himself because he's making a shitload of money doing speeches. Doesn't he have a book coming out as well?
So if he writes it.
Yeah, or a ghost-written book. I think it's more about him promoting himself, and because there's little chance of him becoming prime minister again. And then prime minister for what? There will be a general election pretty soon, and he's not going to be able to save the party at this stage. So I think he would prefer. I don't know. He's of course very unpredictable. But I think it's a case of promoting himself. Now Liz Truss, really, I don't know what the hell she's up to, because she can't resuscitate her reputation. It's completely trashed. It's not like she was, you know, stabbed in the back and then, you know, no, she did it to herself. So I think it's, I really don't know what the hell she's doing. Maybe it's just another case of, you know, remember me. Maybe there's some time, maybe sometime in the future I can come back and have some sort of senior role. But with Boris, it's about self-promotion. It's always been about self-promotion.
Do you think there's actually a case that Liz Truss thinks that she could actually run as prime minister again?
I think in her mind, yes. But in reality, I don't think so.
A lot of people have come out on Twitter defending her. You got the IEA back out. You've got young conservatives coming out. You've had conservative members and MPs coming out. And it's like, wow, the party's actually almost in three different camps. Mm-hmm. Liz Truss, Boris and Sunak. But then there's also this extreme Brexiteer group. I don't think any of those three really land in the extreme Brexiteer group. Unless I'm reading it wrong, I wouldn't say any of them are particularly far right in what they're saying. One was a Remainer, the other one flip flaps. That's Boris between, you know, Ukraine, yeah, go and join the EU. UK, no, bad EU. And then you've got
who's
centre left in his socialist policies. He's even libertarian.
They're not happy with Sunak at all because they see him as a socialist. which is quite interesting, but they're not happy also that he won without the backing of the party. So he was nominated by the MPs. He didn't win the support of the party members. So that's always stuck in their what do you say?
Crawl.
In their crawl, yeah. I forgot the term, but it's that's something they want revenge for. But I don't know whether they'll go with Liz Truss or they'll prefer to have Boris back. But as you said, there are different camps, so it could be a case of who will win out. But whoever does win isn't going to hold on to power for very long, because the country's in a disaster.
I think the question is really who is potential leader of the opposition, and Rishi Sunak probably is not. He's going to resign. So I think people are lining up to see who can take that job, and I dread the thought of Liz Truss as leader of the opposition. You know, it's possible that we need to get ready for the revival of the Liberal of the Liberal Party. We need to get ready for that, because the Conservative Party is going to implode if it doesn't sort itself out within the next few months. It is doomed and will never recover.
I'm not sure if it. I think it is permanently split. There's so many different. There's like, because you used to have in the 80s and 90s, you could argue you had the real politics. They were trying to be practical. They're not necessarily practical, but they were trying to be practical in their, or pragmatic in their outlook, less ideological. And this group seems to have the pragmatism elements in it. It has the libertarian elements and it has the far right elements in it. And I don't see how they can come together. Noreen, any thoughts from you on Liz Truss or Boris in terms of preference? Or
I think in my head, Liz Truss still thinks she is prime minister. So I think she's been gone a while and she's
like Trump still thinks he's president.
yeah. Doesn't think she's done anything wrong. And yeah, she's probably had a bit of a hard time, but she thinks in her mind, she is and will continue to be. And also I have this theory that she's like projected her consciousness into Rishi. So she is. but I think Boris, I sort of agree with you, Max, in terms of, I don't see him going again for prime minister, but I get this vibe, like with a lot of people at the moment, that they're just loving this celebrity thing. I get this sense of like, oh, it's not just being an MP anymore, or I'm a celebrity. I can do these other things that will bring in just as much money and people. I'm in the papers, like it's almost an ego thing. So, I mean, obviously from my own parody comedy point of view, I'm enjoying that massively. I'm not sure how good that is for the country, but that would be my stance.
Rees-Mogg is there as well.
GB News.
GB News. I was going to say I was looking at GB News this morning. I wasn't, but I was looking at the sort of fallout from GB News. Stein, and it just seems so distressing. There you've got a company, which isn't even going to take the smack on the wrist from Ofcom. And a smack on the wrist from Ofcom is like being savaged by a fractious worm. It has no teeth, and they're expecting Stein to pay for.
Can you explain to that maybe to people who don't understand what's going on?
Mark is Mark Stein, isn't it? Mark yes. Stein, the Birmingham boy, who's described as Canadian. Very, very interesting. If you look up Mark Stein. Apparently, when he was at school, he had Tolkien's Latin book.
Wow.
Isn't that extraordinary? Look what's happened.
That is extraordinary.
Anyway, Mark Stein did an interview a while ago with a lady who was a sort of conspiracy theorist about the pandemic and whipped this up. And this seems to have been, I think there are 114 complaints, so mild, to Ofcom, and GB News is certainly expecting a fine and a slap on the wrist, but it said that any fine would be paid by Stein, not by them. Now, I'm not a fan of Stein's at all. I remember him saying some pretty foul things about Muslims. In fact, I think it was almost a blueprint for Suella Braverman. Ooh, I like that. I'm going to have that. Let's call it Invasion of the Albanians. So I think he's got a lot to answer for. But I think if you're working for an organisation, and particularly if the organisation doesn't let you put forward your own defence, you certainly shouldn't be paying.
But also, they have to take responsibility because they edited it.
They put it out. They put it out, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, I hope in time Talk TV will take responsibility for Nadine and Doris. But I don't think it got as many views as maybe it deserved.
I'm pretty sure all four of us get more views on YouTube than a lot of GB News. Because you look at what GB News does in terms of their program and content, and I don't think they actually understand how YouTube works. They just shunt out material without really processing it or understanding it. And interestingly, the Rejoining You party has started going on there quite a bit now. Like, they invited the North coordinator, John Felch, onto GB News recently. And it was very interesting because they were asking for material that they could then use. And GB News just seemed to have this attitude of, we don't have time, but just help yourself. You can have anything you want. It was almost like, that just doesn't sound very professional. It sounds like you're struggling. And I mean, we can see that.
They are struggling.
Yeah. Well,
we should all volunteer to go onto GB News and take it over. I'm sure we could do it. We could have a whale of a time.
I think they did quite well during the pandemic because they presented this alternative view. But they hope to capitalize on the culture wars, but that's not really working out. There's like the vicar. What's his name? I don't remember his name.
Calvin.
Yeah. Calvin. Like, he puts out some videos. So the videos do quite well, I've noticed on Twitter, but I don't think there are actually people watching the show. You know, it's on Sky, it's on pay-per-view, I think. It's, or you can find it on TV, but I don't think the viewing on TV is, so the actual audience that they're hoping to focus on is actually watching the show.
Yes. Is Twitter dying as well?
Yeah.
I was introduced to Twitter and Instagram when I was on Channel 4. I didn't understand either. I don't understand either now. I've never made any money out of either. I feel every so often I have to feed the beast, but Twitter, I just don't understand. I don't get Twitter.
It seems that you can only make money on TikTok and YouTube. Everything else, they make money out of you and your content.
Well, TikTok, I can't do TikTok. I mean, and Instagram, I feel... Instagram is only there if you want to sell ASOS bikinis, and I don't think that's my market.
Oh, I think you look great in a bikini.
Oh, Noreen, you're too charmer. Kind.
Or a mankini.
No. It would be looking like an archimandrite on a day off. It would be like Patriarch Kirill going on his boat. No, we don't want that at all. But. bullying on the subject of Patriarch Kirill. Did you know that Patriarch Kirill has now been exposed quite definitely as a KGB member, as a KGB agent? He was more important than President Putin. He was working in Switzerland and probably has got a family, a wife and kids in Switzerland.
Wow.
It came out sometime last year.
Yes, I did hear about it briefly in the news, but I didn't read about it. What was the... So he's more powerful than Putin?
Well, probably, yes, as a KGB agent. Putin was really just a handbag carrier in Berlin. And so I think what both of them have done is use their influence, probably the things they know, to engineer for themselves new jobs and better jobs. And Putin, of course, used gang members in St. Petersburg, and he got to be president. And Kirill got to be patriarch, and they're sort of running the operation. And it's quite, I on many occasions when I was in Moscow, I was caught behind Kirill's motorcade or pushed to the side of the road by Kirill's motorcade. It went on and on. It was bigger than Putin's.
Wow. Mind
you, Putin's not very big. You know, he's in the Kubinski heels. He's lifts.
So how long did you spend in Moscow?
Well, I made a point of never spending more than a month at any one time. But 1 year, definitely, I was in Moscow sort of for a month, and I was back in the UK for a week, and then back in Moscow, and so I got to know it very well. And it's a very interesting, very beautiful place. But yes, I was often lined up in the university as somebody who has to shake hands with the big guys. And told that I have to speak Russian, which was always a strain. and meeting Putin, I had to go and change afterwards. It was disturbing. Medvedev, I can say, has a handshake like a wet cabbage. So actually, he's got a lot in common with Mrs. May, hasn't he? Really, they both belong in a vegetable patch.
That's quite interesting.
Both of them have had life after office. So Mr. Medvedev has now recreated himself as the demon threatening nuclear annihilation. And Mrs. May is standing behind Boris, sort of wagging her finger. So it's basically the same, really. Slightly different level of punishment. But,
so what position is he in now? Was he given the position of prime minister?
Because
he was the only other president apart from Putin.
I think he's head of the party. Years. He's head of the party.
Oh, wow. So he's been
a bit like Lee Anderson.
Lee Anderson. He is the communist party. He is the, not the communist, the Russia United. He is the... He is the Moscow equivalent of Lee Anderson.
And both preaching death, one by nuclear weapons, one individually, death. One at a time. I don't know which one's worse, actually.
It's disturbing. So with that in mind, who would be our equivalent of Prigozhin, Putin's chef? I would suggest possibly Suella Braverman.
Yes.
I was going to say Lee Anderson because he's 30p Lee. And she thinks we can all make unlimited amounts of food at that price. I mean, such a. I'm gonna go on to ECHR because I think that.
Oh right, very
that
good.
Ties in quite nicely with Russia. So obviously we've been talking about ECHR in the news quite a bit over the week in regards to the government repeatedly saying they're going to pull out, and it seems to be in relation to immigration and sending people to Rwanda. Max, do you want to? You want to give us a bit of a lowdown on this?
Yeah, so the European Court of Human Rights, the Brexiteers and the far right want the UK to pull out of it. There are some there are problems with that because in particular to the Good Friday Agreement. So the Good Friday Agreement, when it was signed and it was supported by both North and South in the Republic of Ireland, there were changes to the Irish Constitution. On the UK side, they introduced the Human Rights Act. Now, the Human Rights Act is, if that was to be impacted by removal from the European Court of Human Rights, it could impact the Good Friday Agreement. So I don't believe that the UK government is going to actually... There's a lot of this, and I covered it in a video this week, where they were talking about this back in 2015 before the Brexit referendum. So they've been always talking about, yeah, we need to get out of the European Court of Human Rights. They use rhetoric such as, it's a foreign court, even though there's a British representative on it. They even said, one guy said this week about how, well, Russia is part of it. Russia haven't been part of the European Court of Human Rights since last year. They were kicked out during the following the invasion of Ukraine. So it's always used as a response to a migrant crisis. We need to get out. Farage has used it. Certain Tories have used it. But at the end of the day, I think it's just rhetoric, because the consequences would be serious consequences on the Good Friday Agreement. If that happened, the Americans would impose sanctions on Britain, and the EU would impose sanctions on Britain. And there's no real benefit in actually getting out, because it's at the end of the day, it's British judges that will decide if people can remain in the UK or not. The focus is always on left-wing lawyers or whatever. But the left-wing lawyers, if you want to call them that, they bring the case to the judge, and the judge makes the final decision.
Based on the rule of law.
On the rule of law,
which is what they've created,
and based on some guidelines as well.
I feel like it's just it's just talk, because if it did happen, I mean, it's going to just create a cataclysmic, just like load of madness. From what I kind of understand of it, it just seems like it's used as a fear builder, something just to spread fear and help control situations and pass the buck on to other people. But and also with this whole sense of the stuff with the Russian interference in the investigation and things, it just feels like it's something, if we get rid of that thing, then they can't go any further. We don't have to delve in. It just seems like it would make no sense to not have it. from my opinion.
Unless it was for self-preservation purposes. Because if the court case goes ahead with the ECHR, so it's been thrown out of the high courts. So Caroline Lucas, a member of the SNP, and Ben Bradshaw have all taken this to the high court saying there's been interference. And the high court judge threw it out saying, I don't think that this is applicable. And I don't think you've provided enough evidence to show this. And they went to the ECHR and they've gone through from the first stage to the second stage, saying that we feel that this has merit in terms of being investigated as to whether, and essentially the question is the British government allowing Russian interference? If that's happening and they're not investigating, that means that we're not having free and fair elections, which is illegal under Article 3, Protocol 6, I think it is, of the ECHR, European Court of Human Rights.
Well, you're assuming that Britain knows, that Britain knows and invited that Russian interference. Of course there is Russian interference.
But they're denying it. So Grant Shapps, Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab have all said... So basically the report came out and stated that no one had been bothered to investigate since the Scottish referendum, which did have interference. So the Scottish referendum had interference. No arguing about that. The report then said, we don't know if there was interference in any election or referendum post the Scottish referendum, because no one has investigated. And they then went on to say, in fact, we're pretty sure they are actively refusing to investigate this because they don't want to look into it. So that then comes on to that interesting thing of why. Dominic Raab came out and said, well, the investigation didn't show there was any interference. And Grant Shapps came out and said, well, it didn't show there was any interference. And Boris, before the report and after the report, said there wasn't any evidence of interference. It's like, well, of course there isn't, because you didn't investigate and you're deliberately not. Tim, what are your thoughts on this?
The various things that Rishi Sunak says he's got to get done. Trade, cost of living, sorting out. He doesn't really speak about Brexit, but I suppose he's got to get Brexit done, as nobody has. And then immigration. And the easiest of those is immigration, because you just kick up a lot more noise and you get Suella Braverman to thump the dispatch box and say invasion in a sort of querulous way. It strikes me that although Suella Braverman is threatening Rwanda by the end of this year, even if she threatens it, it probably will be so challenged in the courts it won't be able to happen. In the same way, the government can threaten leaving the European Court of Human Rights. But again, it's not likely to happen before the end of the parliament and the next general election. So I suggest that both these things, Rwanda and the European Court, are election winners rather than serious propositions. They're not going to get my vote, I'm afraid. If this is the way the Conservative Party wishes to go, I will fight against it vigorously. I won a case in the European Court of Human Rights. It took 11 years. My partner was tortured and we took the case. My partner was tortured in Greece and we took the case eventually to the European Court of Human Rights. It took 11 years. The European Court of Human Rights found in our favour. And it also insisted on Greece changing four different laws, which 20 years later it still hasn't done. So one could point out, and I could point out from my own personal experience, the European Court of Human Rights has about as many teeth as Ofcom. It also is a bit of a fractious worm, but there are some fractious worms which I think, a good garden needs worms in it.
And a lot of international organisations need teeth. I was talking with Noreen about the League of Nations earlier this week in regards to the fact that one of the reasons it failed to stop World War II didn't have any teeth, yes. Which is why we then arguably set up three institutions, the EU, the UN, and the ECHR.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as well, because I think Nigel Farage was on TV saying...
You and I totally understand where this court comes from,
yeah.
And I understand why it was set up, and I get why Churchill and British lawyers were behind doing it. Yeah. I get all of that. But with respect to that argument, yes. That was 75 years ago. We are now living in a very different world. You yourself talked about...
Well, we aren't, are we, Nigel? We aren't living in a different world. We're still getting situations, you know, we've still had horrible situations in Europe where the equivalent of Holocaust have been taken place or the equivalent of ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, in the ex-Yugoslavia. These all happened.
30 years ago.
Yeah,
30 years ago. Those horrible things did happen.
History is... If you don't learn from history, if you say it'll never happen again because it was in the past, then you're instantly condemning yourself to recreating those problems.
But also the Ukraine, like all the stuff going on over there, that will eventually be brought to the ECHR. They need teeth, and they need to be able to look after individual citizens. Because what we found in history is when you allow governments to do what they want, which is what this government seemed to be doing, they can get out of hand. I mean, most of history, we've been in dictatorships. Some people call it a monarchy. It's a dictatorship. That's all it is. It's just under the guise that religion is backing it. Whereas in some dictatorships, they don't have religion backing them.
Well, religion and philosophy. Plato also backed it. He called it aristocracy.
What, the Republic?
Yeah.
So
in the attempt in Syracuse. So be careful.
Yes. You're absolutely correct on that, except one of the most interesting things with Plato stuff is because it's all written, we don't know when he's being sarcastic and we don't know the tone, which then leaves up to a huge level of ambiguity. We know he was hacked off with democracy as well because they killed Socrates, philosophy teacher. So
our understanding of democracy has changed, Alex.
Yes.
I always feel when you're here, I need to burst into some Greek philosophy simply because of your name, Alexandros. I shall restrain myself. I'm restraining myself.
Can I just ask an unrelated question? I notice you have a nice lava lamp there, Alex.
Yes, this is brand new. This is from the Glow Company. They've sent me a lovely little lava lamp.
It's like a licorice all sort. It's wonderful.
Yes, I was thinking Beetlejuice.
When it stops doing its bubbling, you could eat it.
Two for one.
Well, I mean, I would peel off all the black licorice stuff because I don't like licorice.
Like you a child.
Are you a licorice fan, Noreen?
Sorry?
Are you a licorice fan?
I hate it. What?
I'm so pleased. Do you think Liz Truss would hate it too? I could imagine her doing some quite sort of careful fingering of licorice, you know. I'm sorry.
Oh. I think she, as long as it's covered in cheese.
Oh yes, of course. So she would remove the cheese from the licorice, I think, wouldn't she?
Yeah, in the shape of some sausage, a pork sausage.
Okay, we really need to get back on track.
Bullying, Mr. Wong.
We'll put a link in the description and in the comments section. If you type words, which will take you to their Facebook page, they're giving away a lava lamp. All you have to do is just go over to their Facebook page and type in Sunday Roast. Or All Hail the Lava Lamp. They'll pick someone at random, and that person will be sent a lava lamp, as long as you're in the UK, because of Brexit.
Yes,
they can't export to the EU. Shock.
will they be able to take it to Northern Ireland?
Oh, my. You just had to get contentious.
I'm sorry. I just think, you know, Good Friday Agreement and all that sort of stuff.
No, I think Northern Ireland should be okay, as long as it's not a sausage, so...
It does have that sort of sausage-like shape, doesn't it?
What, the lamp?
The lamp, yes.
That's a bit.
Yes, I mean, you could imagine that being produced in the sort of in the fields of Lincolnshire.
Or a Lee Anderson food bank.
A Lee Anderson food bank. Take that and be happy.
Excuse me of the sexual tension between Boris and Nadine, that lamp. I think that it tells a story.
Where would it be placed? placed between them, in for another hug. bullying from Rob. Can we please get on?
Bullying from Rob, that is our last topic.
Yeah, Alex, I don't know if you in if when this show goes up, I don't know if you can include the clip of Dominic Raab staring at Keir Starmer. I don't know if you saw that.
And he does that weird, yeah. I can definitely do that. And he does that weird thing with his lips where he's like, and you're like, liking this yummy moment? I don't understand.
He's thinking of Chianti and fava beans, I believe, at that moment.
And going back to the beach on Crete,
yes.
while Kabul burns,
wants to eat Keir Starmer's face.
Well, Keir Starmer's face is full of resonant. That's another R he could use. Resonant, a resilient and a wretched.
Robotic. They're all robotic. I mean, Boris is literally the only non-robot in that entire group, isn't he? Rishi.
Well, yes. Boris actually—it's like having a rag doll, isn't it? As opposed to a mechanical arm. Well, that mechanical arm—that is Liz Truss, isn't it? And then the sort of the simpering incoherence of Nadine Dorries. There's another chapter.
There are a bunch of bullies, aren't they? Patel, Dorries. I think Boris is just in his own little head so much that he doesn't even think about other people. But they're all a bit vicious. Even Gavin Williamson had education, did an advert
The guy with
Gavin
the whips.
Dreadful. Go, Gavin, go. It's savaged by Mr. Bean. Or Forrest Gump. Oh, Gavin Williamson. I'm so pleased he's gone for a little while. With his spider.
Yes,
he is a Spider-Man, isn't he? Yeah.
Yes, he had a trenchler on his desk and a whip.
Yeah.
An actual physical whip.
But in contrast to all these, Chris Heaton-Harris is charming. Have you met
who? Gavin? He's charming.
Have you met Chris Heaton-Harris?
No, but he does come across as a reasonable individual, even though he was from the ERG.
Yeah, I think he was only briefly there, and I didn't realise he was. But he's a nice man. He's a nice man. He tried to persuade me to stand, and I almost did. I almost did, and then I realised I would be under Mrs. May, and I thought no, I'd already come up against her and Andrea Leadsom, and I thought no. That was about a student visas.
But you had to run through the cabbage fields with her.
Wellies were on and primed. I was wellies were on and soiled indeed, self-soiled. I went through all the preliminary stuff, and then I just thought no. I pulled out at the thought of Mrs. May, really, and Mrs. May and Gove.
It seems that you've been approached by a couple of parties to run.
Yes. Yes, and every time I've been doing some councillor stuff, the Labour people have always sidled up to me and said, "When are you coming over to us?" And I thought, it's very sweet. I feel sort of like
I would love to see you in the House of Commons.
I would enjoy it.
But you'd have to be in opposition. That's the thing.
I couldn't be in. You couldn't imagine me as a minister, could you? Really?
I could.
Giggling over something
serious. The Minister
serious.
Of Fun and Joy. That is your sole aim.
Your robe on. I think you'd have to be there with your robe on.
I'd have to be there with... Well, you know, that just puts me in the House of Lords, doesn't it?
Yes.
Final question. If you could be a minister of something, anything, you could be creative as I was just then, or... You can be as serious as you'd like. What ministerial position would you take? And what would be the one thing that you'd like to enact whilst minister of that department?
I'd just like to take over the ministry, which was previously the Digital Media, Culture and Sport. I don't think I'd know what to do with the sport bit, but culture gives so much to our country and it's so short-changed. And Ofcom is not an answer to everything. We need to make sure that the arts are properly... supported. We need to make sure that television is properly supported, because it's an extraordinary source of information, and it's a comfort to so many people. And we need to make sure. Actually, we do need to make sure that sport and creativity. It's not just everything else that you don't think is important. This is how we measure whether or not our society has value.
Yep.
What we do, what we do when we are not just trying madly to survive. And that is why I find it so distressing that it's been managed by a series of twits, one after the other, from Oliver Dowden to Nadine Dorries to Michelle Donnellan to now, I think, Lucy Fraser. It's one after the other. All of these people have failed at their other jobs. Lucy Fraser failed in justice, and she was there with Rob, so maybe she felt bullied. I don't know. Who could tell? I don't think Dominic Raab can tell the difference between robust and bullying. But, you know, maybe Lucy Fraser has an angle on that. But I imagine she's not going to do very much for this ministry. I would do something for it. You know, Fleming in equity to represent everybody, because when equity joined with the Variety Artists Federation in the 1930s, the Variety Artists Federation had an idea that if you were in entertainment in any form, if you had an audience, you had a right to be represented by a union. And equity, which comes late into the game, it came in the late 1930s, it decides that its job is to validate who is and who is not an appropriate performer. So there are plenty of people who are being manipulated and abused by management, which is precisely why there was a union set up in the first place. We go back to all the days of the early music hall and the first walkout and the first strike. And that was because people were being manipulated and abused by management, and we mustn't let it happen. And if people want to join a union, they can. But when I asked Fleming, you know, where do people are on television who are not represented, who represents them? And he doesn't want to answer.
Nope.
And we need a ministry that's going to answer those questions if the union isn't.
Very good. For me, probably education. And the first thing I'd do is make it mandatory that critical thinking skills are part of the curriculum, because it is desperately needed. And I think it would change so many things in society. If you could start off there, you'd have a completely different approach to the media. You'd have a completely different approach to politics. So that's what I would do. Not very interesting, but not funny, not interesting. Noreen, what about yourself? What would you do?
I actually think, without repeating you, Tim, I think I would have to do culture, media, and again, sports.
Come with me.
I'm there with you. Sports, not so much. I mean, a bit of basketball I could do, but that's about it. But
you can appreciate it, can't you?
I can, yeah, from a distance. Yeah. but with media and culture, I just think I would, first of all, just make sure that everyone knows how to work an auto cue. Like, I think, like, basic skills with Parliament. You know, you don't have to be the best communicator, you don't have to do it, but just make sure everyone has a certain level. I mean, obviously I want to help the rest of the country, but I think that's quite a big place to start. And also maybe the gatekeeper to stop MPs who shouldn't maybe go into the celebrity world, stopping them and then giving other
Matt Hancock no more.
Yeah.
Well, no, have pity for Matt Hancock. He's going to have no life after this Parliament. Poor man. He's stuck in the stationery cupboard with Gina Colodangelo. Ooh, give me an HB pencil with a rubber on the end.
I'd be the minister for finding corruption. That would be a great job. Like, rounding up all the people that are corrupt and throwing them in jail. Maybe minister for finding all the racists as well, and rounding them up and doing something horrible to them, or re-educating them all.
Would you need a guillotine?
No, I
can arrange something.
Science revolution yet.
I just need
the tarantula Cronus. That's all I need.
Gilob.
We didn't do the introductions.
We did do the introduction, did we not?
No.
Oh, why didn't we do them, Alex?
Don't worry, I'll do it. I'll make sure there's a bit of a plug for your channels on there to make up for it. I'll figure something out. Even if it's just a voice recording, I'll put that in.
It was because I went sort of wild, isn't it, at the beginning? Noreen, I'm so sorry.
No, don't.
And on that note... Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.